This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. Before we get to Connie, Jim, Christian, Richard, well, we actually have one phone line open. Someone fell off during the break, 1-800-919-3776. But before we get to any of those wonderful people, we talked to our dear friend, who is just a handsome devil as well. Saw him yesterday doing a terrific job on the mothership with Mina Kimes. Our dear friend, Frank Isola, is here. Frank, it's Peter and Don. How are you?
Peter and Don, what's up? Don must be so thrilled. His Rangers, they just can't lose. They don't give up any power play goals. I'm all over it.
And you were around in 94. This is fun.
Yeah, obviously the only difference was the Knicks were more of a favorite. It wasn't, you figure if they get past this round, if they do have to play Boston, they'll be the underdog. But there are some similarities. Plus, too, and I'm probably guilty of it as much as anybody, but, for the last 20 years, you get one good Knicks team and everyone, they remind you of the 90s Knicks, This team reminds you of the 90s Knicks, and obviously Tom Thibodeau being there has something to do with it. The fact that Jalen Brunson, whose dad was on a few of those teams in the late 90s, so there definitely is a connection there. But it's more about the way that they play. It's just they're tough, both mentally and physically. It's no nonsense. It's just about winning. They obviously don't get too wrapped up in any of the nonsense that goes on. And that's why I think they're also a very likable team as well.
So what is your number one feeling coming out of last night? Michael's was kind of a bit of dread with regard to the news that we received. I'm tending to be a little bit more glass half full about the situation. They were able to manage the win, and I feel like they'll be able to at least pull it together for game four, even if you drop game three. But what is your overwhelming feeling from last night's game?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if they could, get one game, you never go into it thinking, let's just get one. You want to win both. But I think if they were to come home 3-1, I think they'll be obviously in a really good position. But you do start to wonder how much, how long they could survive with so many guys being down. And to me, a lot of it, and I understand what Rick Carlisle did after the game, because the last thing he was going to do was talk about how his all-star point guard hasn't done anything in the fourth quarter of both games, and the fact that Miles Turner is getting outworked by the Knicks front line. So I understand why he went in that direction. But the Knicks, I would still be somewhat optimistic. I just think they're tougher than Indiana. They're in a good position. This far, if you go back to the last day of the season, guys, remember, there was this idea of, lose the last game. Why would you want to play Indiana in the first round? Now the Knicks have home court advantage. It's actually a really good thing to have. Yeah. And let's remember, they are 6-2 in the playoffs thus far. It's a pretty good record.
Do you have any thought or theory on what it was that kept Brunson out for that quarter and a half?
It's weird because you didn't really see anything that happened. Last year, and the Knicks didn't reveal this at all during the series, but he was really bothered by an ankle injury against Miami. And, the one thing about him is he's not going to talk about it. He's not going to use it as an excuse. He's just going to keep playing. So, come on, guys. You watch the games. He's getting hit every play, even when he's on defense. Philadelphia did it a lot, too, where they just make him run through screens. So, you're just trying to wear him down. You get him in the fourth quarter. He still seems to have a big-time burst left. But it definitely is something that's worrisome because, he does have the ball in his hands a lot, and he does get hit all the time.
Any thoughts on how he pulled it together and managed to come back and by the end of the game look like nothing had happened whatsoever?
Yeah, I like that thing, somebody had a meme of the Karate Kid.
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, Don just said that, yeah.
Yeah, rubbing your hands together. Who knows? Could it be adrenaline? Could that have something to do with it? And maybe the fact that he's not a super athlete, it's not like it's Ja Morant. He's got a foot injury, and he needs that to explode off of. He certainly, uses his strength and his quickness, but everything is, on the ground that he's doing. And he's so good at understanding angles, and he always seems to have a defender on his hip. And once you're on his hip, you're dead meat. He's either going to score, he's going to draw a foul, or he's going to do both. But I think that's his mindset. I just think that's the way he's always been. And if you really think about it, the team takes on the personality of Jalen Brunson. The whole team is really businesslike in the way that they play, where it's a lot of offensive rebounds, a lot of hustle plays that they make. A lot of it has to do with him. I think in a moment like that, I don't think he's thinking, I'm going to come out and I'll be the hero and everybody will praise me because, you know, I got hurt in the game and I came back out and played. I think he looks at it as, this is what I'm supposed to do. The team needs me. I need to go out there and play. I think, and you could tell that kind of leadership resonates with the rest of his teammates.
Now, obviously, there's a lot of Tibbs involved in this personality as well, but I was just saying in the last segment, Frank, that you kind of got to give Julius Randle credit for setting the tone and the persona of this team to some degree too. I mean, I feel like he was such a lunch pail guy, played so many games, played so many minutes. Obviously he's not there now, but do you think Randle deserves a bit of credit for the personality of this team as well?
No, I think so. And I also think, you know, Julius Randle was just seen as this guy, oh, the Knicks just need to fill out their roster, so they're going to go bring in a guy like Julius Randle, somebody that's going to score 20 points for a bad team. And I think that Julius Randle completely bought into what the Knicks were trying to do. And let's remember, you know, the guy did get MVP votes a couple of years ago. He's been all NBA. And I think that certainly did start it. And I think now you wonder how it would look with Randle out there. And obviously, you know, part of the success or a lot of the success the Knicks are having right now is because the ball is in Jalen Brunson's hands all the time. I think it would still be able to work. I know this. I think the players and I think certainly the coaching staff wish they had their entire team at full strength because, you know, you look at the Eastern Conference, and we all know that the Boston Celtics are the favorite, but look what happened to Boston last year in the second round. You know, they lost Game 1 to Philadelphia at home. They were on the ropes in Game 6. They obviously blew them out in Game 7, but then they fell behind, you know, 3-0 to Miami and ended up losing that. So Boston is unbelievably talented. They got incredible size on the team. You know, if the two teams end up playing, they'll have a lot of guys to throw at Jalen Brunson. But the one thing the Knicks have that the Boston necessarily hasn't shown yet is this level of toughness. And I think that's carried the Knicks certainly against Philadelphia. And I think it's carrying them right now against Indiana as well.
You know, I'm curious your thoughts. The comparable with the Rangers and the Knicks is, boy, we never thought Brunson was going to be this good when they got him. And like Vincent Trocheck with the Rangers. And so how much of that is just the player just growing or the organizations seeing something in a player that maybe other organizations didn't see, or just the fact that they just happened to fit in what those teams do to bring out the best in that player?
I think it's all of that, and I think scouting is always underrated in all these sports. But it's also having like a winning mentality. You know, you have to bring guys who are willing to buy in and really are going to be the guys that are going to spread the culture, you know, all in the locker room. And that's something that Jalen Brunson did when he was at college at Villanova. He's certainly doing it now. And I also like, you know, really what you need in all these sports, you just need hard playing guys. Yes, talent certainly wins. But, you know, look at a team like Phoenix. They went for the big names. You know, Bradley, they had to go out and get Bradley Beal and obviously Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. You know, those are huge names. But who are the guys that do the dirty work? And they really don't have those guys. You look at the Knicks, and they got, like, the one guy who's an all-star, and everyone does the dirty work. I remember a head coach, an assistant coach with the Warriors once telling me, we were talking, I said, yeah, because 50% of it is just getting guys to play hard. He said, no, it's actually 90% of it is getting guys to play hard. And the one thing that everyone knows, and I think this applies to the Rangers, is every single night that they're playing, they're going to play hard. So, yeah, you could say, well, that's required. They should be doing that. That's not true of every team. And I think with this Knicks team, so that's why other teams know that you play against them, it's going to be a battle. A month before the playoffs started, I do the radio show in the morning on Sirius with Brian Scalabrine. He does, obviously, the Celtic games at NBC Sports Boston. And he kept saying, like, the team I'm worried about, if I'm the Celtics, is the Knicks. Because they play so hard, they just keep coming, there's a toughness about them. And I think right now, we're seeing that. I mean, you know, Philadelphia's more talent than the Knicks, and I understand Embiid was somewhat limited, but, you know, the Knicks took them out in 6 games. I would say the talent level with Indiana is probably slightly better right now than the Knicks because the Knicks are injured and the Knicks are up 2-0 in that series.
So if you have to make a pick right now, has anything changed for you in terms of the ultimate result of this series?
I thought the Knicks would win. I still think they'll figure out a way to win. The big thing will be what happens with Tyrese Haliburton. I thought in game one, and he was 2-for-6. And I know Rick Carlisle keeps giving him an out about his back and this and that. I felt like he wanted no part of that game in the fourth quarter, like especially offensively. He did not seem like a threat at all. I understand he's pass first, but to me, like, he wasn't being aggressive. I mean, he was standing dribbling the ball about 5 feet behind the three-point line. and knew he wasn't going to shoot. So it was almost 4-on-5. I think a lot will depend on how Tyrese Haliburton plays. But I know this, too, from being in Indiana for a lot of those playoff series, you know, back in the late 90s, you know, the fans there are going to be there'll be Knicks fans in that arena, but it's not going to be like it was in Philadelphia, where you have a short drive wherever you live in the New York area. It's going to be mostly Indiana fans, and that's part of what Rick Carlisle was doing. That was all. He was throwing, you know, he was throwing the cheese out there for the Indiana fans, playing right. You know, he's striking all the chords. Small market team.
Right.
Everyone's out to get us. The big bad Knicks are getting all the calls. That was all done by design. You know, yes, I get it. People say, oh, it sounds like he's crying. That looked like Phil Jackson, Pat Riley from the 90s, all this gamesmanship that we see so often in the playoffs.
But it felt like the whining, especially sending the stuff to the officials. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I didn't. Did you think the calls were that egregious for the Knicks in Game 2? And doesn't it come across a little bit more desperation for a team that still hasn't even played a home game yet?
No, I think you're 100% right. But I also think he's not going to sit there and say what I said. You know, my all-star point guard's not doing anything. I mean, he's getting completely dominated by the guy that he made the Olympic team over. Yeah. I mean, what's going on there? They didn't say, Miles Turner, you're the biggest dude out there. How come everyone's getting offensive rebounds? I would think privately in, like, film sessions, he's saying that to the team. You know, Rick Carlisle's been around for a long time, and he's been part of these Indiana Knicks series as an assistant coach. I think the whole thing was done by design, obviously. And I think the one call that they're upset about, and it's really the one call that I didn't like in the series, was the moving screen on Miles Turner, because the coaches know that stuff happens
right
all the time. You know, the referee's missing the deflection. They called it a kickball. You know, that's just, they had a bad angle, and it's kind of an optical illusion, I guess, because the guy's sticking at his leg as he's sticking at his hand. I think, and I know a lot of people are kind of like when I say this, I would just make everything reviewable in the final 2 minutes. I understand it's going to take forever. The game's take forever anyway. So, you know, this way we can clear all that stuff up. Because remember, when Zach Zarba went to the replay on the Miles Turner play, letter of the law, the referee's got that right. I think most people are thinking, well, that's going on all game. Why are you calling it that? But let's face it, guys. Indiana would have missed the shot. The Knicks would have gotten the rebound. They would have gotten fouled. They would have made the two free throws. It would have been up three. That's what would have happened.
You know, it's crazy with the coaches because, you know, in the NHL the other night, Jim Montgomery, the head coach of the Bruins, called out his best player, David Pastrnak, and then he goes out and scores the game-winning goal in overtime. And everybody praises him for it. And then you could say, well, was Carlisle supposed to call out his player? He doesn't. Is that a reflection on a coach not wanting to do it? Or is it a reflection of, I don't know if my player is going to respond to that kind of public criticism?
I think there's a lot of that. I definitely do. And, you know, Tyrese Haliburton's never been through this before. Mm. And I think Rick Carlisle, having coached a number of teams, you know, Jim Montgomery, I think, is a little bit different, too, as a coach. I think he's a little bit more of a talker and things like that. And he definitely, he killed the guy, and then the guy scores in overtime, which was pretty amazing. But I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Haliburton is a young player, never been in it before. And let's face it, too, Indiana knows their season is tomorrow night. You can go back to New York down 3-1 and still win the series. They're not going down 0-3. That's a much different story. They're not going to come back from that. So that was like a call to the team. All right, we have to give everything we have in Game 3, but it's also for the fans. The first questionable call that goes against the Indiana Pacers, you're going to hear the chant of you refs, you know what. And I've been there for the games. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a bunch of like young guys in their 20s and 30s sitting in the front row and screaming. There's like mothers and fathers there. I mean, I remember being at games when you know, John Starks was playing, and some of the things being said to him, you wouldn't believe it. And then the next year, it was Sprewell, and the fans were killing him. So it's not, it's a hardcore, sometimes could be a little over the top. I get the whole Midwest charm. They lose that when they go inside that arena. They watch the Pacers play the Knicks.
Frank, you're a gentleman, a scholar, and a man we love. Any chance that Mikal Bridges would ever, ever make it across the river?
It depends on what the Knicks want to give up for. But there was that talk of Mikal Bridges to Houston for like 4 picks and Jalen Green. If I were the Nets, I would have seriously considered that. I think he'd like to be there for his little Villanova reunion.
I would be doubt about that.
But,
and by the way,
I don't know if that's going to happen.
I doubt it, but think about how good he's already been. Think about how much better he'd be, considering every one of these Nova kids on this team, they seem to elevate their game by at least like 50% once they play together. So it could be a very scary a possibility.
Or you could be fair and give Tom Thibodeau a little credit, since two of the guys are on their fourth team, Dante DiVincenzo and Josh Hart. So they did have opportunities to do this at other teams. So now that they're there under Tom, we could give the current coach of the Knicks a little credit, Peter. Just a little bit.
Fair enough. But there is a special chemistry with the three of them that does seem a little different. I mean,
I definitely think there's some truth to that. And I thought I went to Villanova when Jalen was there, so I paid a lot of money for that team to win.
All right, Frank. Thanks, buddy.
I'm also Villanova too.
Take care.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Bye.
There he is, the great Frank Isola. Let's keep taking your calls now as we talk New York Knicks basketball. Big win, 2-0, back in Indiana tomorrow night, in all likelihood without OG Anunoby. Let's go to Jim in the car. Hey, Jim, what do you got?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Always.
I think Tibbs gets a bad rap because, you know, one of the things that's been exciting about his tenure here is the second squad has been great. We started with like Derrick Rose, and you know, when Rose and Hart and IQ would come out on the floor, it was great. He used a ton of subs, and right now our bench with healthy would be Josh Hart, Hartenstein, Precious Achiuwa, Boyan, and Miles McBride. So tell me he wouldn't be playing them if he needed to, if they were available. A lot of times in the earlier part of the season and also last season, the second squad was more fun to watch.
That
Julius
is true.
Julius Randle grinding the ball, RJ Barrett throwing up bricks, you know, and then D Rose would come in and light it up, and Josh Hart would be running and gunning, and IQ would be throwing up rainbows, and it was a lot of fun. So I think Tibbs gets a bad rap on it. It's all injuries.
Yeah, and well, it all starts from what happened in Minnesota and Chicago, and it goes back to that injury with Rose, and this is the way he decides to play it. And maybe Peter will look back if he doesn't win here, and that will be a recurring theme. But I don't think he's got any choice now. If I was going to be critical, like I said earlier in the show, it would be some of the minutes the guys played in November and December, because I do think you could wear yourself down. I still think the one loss against Philadelphia where they were missing foul shots probably came from fatigue. But at this point, he's got no other choice. He really doesn't have any other choice. If they're going to play without OG for any significant amount of time, what are you going to do?
And also, you got to just keep giving credit to Leon Rose and World Wide West and what this team has done. I mean, do you guys remember the level of crying that was happening about us saying goodbye to RJ Barrett? I mean,
my God.
With all due respect, guys, do you even remember RJ Barrett?
See ya!
I mean, play it again.
See ya!
I mean, no one cares. And I say this with all due respect. I've never seen someone forgotten in this way. Considering there was actually a legitimate, I'm not mocking people, there was a legitimate reason to be like, wait a second, homegrown Knicks, RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, hey man, Don, that was a different team. The caring about RJ Barrett and IQ, Don, feels like yesteryear of like, we want to have our fun little engine and now it's over. Right. It's a completely different team, an actual real competitive team you don't even remember.
Well, part of it was the fact that he was homegrown. The other part is that it wasn't until recently that you trusted the Knicks were going to do the right thing with the deal. How are they going to screw this up? But they're not screwing it up anymore. Now you trust them. Now you trust Leon Rose. Talk about the turnaround with Nick management. When was the last time you trusted management?
It's been a long time. Some would say ever, their whole life, rooting for this team. Let's go to Richard in Manhattan. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Peter. Don, I got an in the wild moment for you.
This would be interesting. This could go so many ways.
Middle of July, 1977, hot night, about 7 o'clock at night. Very hot, steamy hot.
Steamy hot.
Walking across 42nd with my friend. We're ready to take the 6 train up to the Bronx.
What a time to be on 42nd Street. 1977, okay. Couldn't be pretty.
Oh, yeah. Right. But this is between 2nd and 3rd Avenue,
right,
where the Daily News building is. Now, in front of the Daily News building, it doesn't say Daily News. It says Daily Planet. So we're there, and we're laughing. We're saying, what's this Daily Planet? They're filming a movie, Superman. This is the first this is the first Action Hero remake, 1977. So we go in the trailer. We start talking to a couple of the actors, actresses. We talked to Margot Kidder. We talked to Christopher Reeve. We didn't know who they were, but they were so nice to us, and they were taking a break. So we went in and we talked. Now we come out of the trailer. All of a sudden, on the set, between 2nd and 3rd on 42nd, the lights go out. So we go, oh, wow. But then we look across west towards Times Square, and it's totally black, pitch black dark. The city had the big blackout of 77.
Yeah. 77 blackouts.
The moral of the story, we were coming from church, and we went back to the church we were coming from on 34th and 2nd, and we got a ride home. But if we didn't stop and see the trailer and see the Daily Planet building, we would have been on the subway. Oh. Who knows what would have happened? Yeah, we would have been stuck on the subway.
Would have been very, very bad. You would have gotten cooked.
It would have been a little different.
That is
fellas, always a pleasure.
That is an awesome, awesome story.
Wow, I got to tell you, Richard brought it today.
That is a really good story.
Can you imagine poor Christopher Reeve, biggest opportunity of his life. He's trying to prepare to shoot the legendary Star Wars Superman film. Doesn't know even what it's going to be yet. He's finding his way in Hollywood. And all of a sudden, while he's concentrating, Richard just shows up and starts dropping. Can you imagine what Richard was talking about then?
Oh, I can imagine.
What do you think he was talking about?
He's probably talking
Honus
about...
Honus Wagner?
You know, Reggie... I don't know, but they probably made a mistake getting Reggie.
You think he would have been present day then? He wouldn't go even older, you're saying?
I think
he's talking Lou Gehrig.
Oh, yeah, I that Jackie Robinson, I tell you, it's the 30th anniversary of him becoming, breaking the color barrier. And here's an interesting point.
Pee-wee Reese. Everyone talks about Jackie. They don't know about the friendship with Pee-wee Reese.
The thing that got me that Superman movie, an okay movie.
I'm a fan.
But it's not so much the movie or the quality of the movie. Is that was the first movie that I went to with my family that wasn't like a Disney or a cartoon movie. It was like the first actual movie that we went to as a family. Because my dad was, because we went to Star Wars a little bit later on that summer. That was also part of it. But we went to go see Superman, and it was pretty cool to do that.
Let's go to...
Do it.
Let's go to Chauncey in Westwood.
Hey, what's up, guys? Great show so far. So I want to make a Tibbs point, but first I want to make a Carlisle point. After the game one, he actually took accountability, saying we don't expect to get calls. I thought it was going to be a breath of fresh air coming off Nick Nurse last series, but then he follows up with game two, blaming all the refs. Meanwhile, what was the storyline going into this series? Him benching his backup point guard in Dallas, Jalen Brunson, and then back-to-back games, he benches his backup point guard, who was arguably the best player on the floor, TJ McConnell. And if you look at the plus minus from the bench and the starters, the whole bench is a plus, the whole starter is a minus. So for him to blame the refs is just an extremely weak stance.
I agree. Listen, I understand where Frank's coming from, that I'm sure it's very strategic, try to get the building up for grabs, I feel like it's a panic move, and it's a weak move. And the weakest one of all, Peter, because everybody sends, tape to the league offices and all that stuff, is the whole big market, small market. Come on, you got to show more imagination than that. I have to believe he was talking about in the Eastern Conference, because the Western Conference might be a Minnesota-Oklahoma City vehicle. But that's such a tired argument. Nobody wants us to win. They're in the bag for the Knicks. Really? They're in the bag for the Knicks. You know what? 50 years of screwing up, NBA. That's how long you've gone without a championship. Now, I know they're probably salivating to have Celtics-Knicks in the conference final. But if they really wanted to Jimmy switch things, then I think they'd be doing better than a Thunder T-Wolf final in the West.
It's not what you want. Can you imagine, though, how much, like, the possibility of what the Eastern Conference and the finals could look like relative to how bad it could have turned out? Or still could. I mean, I suppose in some crazy world where Cleveland comes back, beats Boston, and then you were to get a Cleveland T-Wolves. I mean, it could go down, in spite of the fact, unless Anthony Edwards were to then go for 55 a night and like change basketball history. And even then, it would be the worst viewed final of all time. But I don't think that's going to be happening. We have, guess what? Every phone line still jammed to talk New York Knicks. Rangers on the table as well. It is the K Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, if you're like me, you love to spend time at home. My home is my happy place. I've been telling you that my home needed a refresh, so I chose the painting professionals at CertaPro Painters. They exceeded my expectations. I easily scheduled online, and my CertaPro Painter consultant provided a free estimate on site. I was able to book the project right there, and the painting, it was exceptional. CertaPro Painters offers a warranty, so I have confidence that they will stand by their work and will make sure I'm completely satisfied. Free estimates, reliable communication, professional painting, all at the right price. Are you ready to paint and take projects off your to-do list? Contact CertaPro Painters and get started today. Each CertaPro Painter's business, independently owned and operated by men and women who live in our community. They're a local business that you can support. Schedule your free estimate online at CertaPro.com. That's Certa with a C. When choosing a painting professional for your home or business, the choice is simple. Choose happy. Choose CertaPro Painters.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
When you come back with a song like that, were they advertising?
I thought it was an ad for Billy Joel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jacob's an interesting guy. Sometimes he comes back with Future and Metro.
That's Billy's birthday today.
Today's his birthday, that's why.
Oh. How old is it? 72?
My guess is 73. That's my guess.
I think 75. I could be wrong.
This might be 75. Oh, I can't. I'm over 75. I'm not thrilled.
About him being 70? I don't know how to feel about it.
Seinfeld is 70, which is a wild one to me. But yeah, I guess Seinfeld kind of blew up later in life. He was 45 when he blew up, essentially, right?
Well, I guess...
Or 40, or his early 40s.
But you know what? I guess, not to insult Billy Joel, but you see the significant difference. But there's a difference in Jerry.
Oh, Jerry looks the same.
Jerry doesn't look that different from the times he was on Seinfeld. You take a look at... The Stranger album, and then you look at Billy Joel now.
Do you want me to give you the one word answer? And I'm saying this with all due respect. Yeah. I'm going to tell you the truth. We're friends, right?
Yeah, sure.
And we want our audience to know the truth.
Of course.
There's one word that is the difference between how Seinfeld looks and how Billy Joel looks. What do you think the word is?
Bald?
Mm-mm.
Why?
Drinking.
Oh, that's terrible. That's true. I mean, but I guess.
Jerry doesn't do anything, though. I'm telling you right now, Jerry's a health freak. He eats really well, as far as I know. Have you ever seen Jerry drunk? He doesn't do any. As far as I know, Jerry doesn't do any.
The times I've hung out with him, he's always sober.
No, but like he doesn't talk about drinking. It's not a part of.
But he eats.
We know Billy partied hard for a long time, of course.
Like a lot of musicians did. You know. I think that's the difference. So you look at Billy Joel 75. It's like, all right, that makes sense. Because you see the big difference from 78 Billy to 2024 Billy.
I mean, really, it was from, he kind of physically started to change a lot in the late 90s and early 2000s. He kind of put, like, Stormfront, even in A River of Dreams, he still looked like Billy Joel for sure.
Yeah.
And then we get to the early 2000s, right. And now, by the way, he doesn't look horrible.
No.
It's just the bald, the beard, and the face is a little...
But I'll tell you what, to his credit, it has not affected his performance or his...
He sounds incredible.
And that's probably all he really, ends at the end of the day, cares about. I hope he's a healthy person.
I hope so, too. And by the way,
I'm sure he'd rather, you know, would rather sound the way he does and play the way he does and look the way he does than to still look like 86 Billy Joel and lose his voice.
No, listen, he sounds great. His performance is incredible. And for all I know, maybe he stopped drinking and doesn't even do that anymore.
I'm sure he has.
I don't know one way or the other. But I just, it, you know, musicians have the musicians who party, it's tough. Although, yeah. Paul Simon's not a big... partier, and Paul Simon got pretty old pretty fast too. Although Paul's now kind of caught up because he's 80 years old.
That's why you just have to, when you look at the Rolling Stone, you look at Mick Jagger. Now, I don't know if there's a history of Mick with drug use the way Keith Richards has.
Paul's 82, by the way, Paul Simon.
Yeah, so that's, you know, 7 years is pretty significant. But for Mick Jagger to still be at that level, it has to be just the conditioning. So I'm sure Mick didn't dabble as much as like Keith did, but Keith still looks the same. He always looked a mess. 40 years ago, he looked like a mess because of the drugs. But the fact that the Rolling Stones are still, you know, have an album and touring, that is unbelievable.
That's freakish. Well, you can't even explain it. And I will say, if you haven't gotten to catch Billy Joel, you know what? Though, I want to take something back. I'm looking here at Paul Simon did Colbert a couple months ago. He actually looks pretty good. His age kind of caught up with him.
Well, but you're 82.
No, that's what I'm saying. But you remember, like, the early 2000s, Paul got very old very quick. But now that he's in his 80s, he kind of still looks like he did 20 years ago. And he actually looks good. So everything goes in cycles. But if you haven't gotten to see Billy Joel at the Garden, I recommend One on the Way Out. The shows are unreal. I think I've seen it 3 times now.
Oh, really?
Two or three
times.
I've
only seen it once, but I'm glad I did.
It's special. Let's go to Christian in Carmel. Hey, Christian.
How you doing, Don, Peter? I just wanted to point something out that I saw all over Twitter after these past couple of Knicks games. People complaining, saying that the NBA is rigged for the Knicks because they're losing money, so they got to rig it for the team that sells the most. I mean, the Garden's packed all the time. I mean, it's packed when Alexei Shved was the point guard, so they should have been rigging these games. It's just annoying that they bring it up.
It's a great point, Christian. Why didn't they start rigging sooner if they wanted to make things just work out for the Knicks?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, all these, I mean, I doubt any Knicks fans are, but if I'm a Knicks fan, I would be walking around doing the Sam Cassell celebration everywhere I go. I do not care. I watch this team lose all the time. Now we're getting some calls go our way. Too bad. It's finally our time, so... just enjoy it as much as we can.
Hey, if you want to complain about bad officiating, you can complain about bad officiating. I think the officiating
everyone has
bad
that right
in
Tom.
Both basketball and hockey. But for the idea, oh, the NHL wants a Canadian team. Oh, they haven't had a Canadian team with a cup since 93. Oh, they want the Leafs. Sorry, the Leafs haven't won a cup since 67. Knicks haven't won a championship since 73. New York, the Mecca, Peter. The Mecca. No championships in 73. Hey, listen, the Heat are a pretty decent team. Do you think they wanted Heat Nuggets last year? Do you think they want a conference final of Thunder T-Wolves? Believe me, if they rig it, they're bad at it.
Yeah, you've been doing a terrible... you had to wait for Jalen Brunson to start becoming otherworldly that no one knew would happen?
Do I think there's bad officiating and sometimes you could be influenced? Sure, but this whole idea that they're conspiring...
Well, we live in a country now where conspiring is everything.
Everything is conspiracy. And I love conspiracy theories. But you got to have it make sense. You got to present me with some evidence, brother.
Real quick, Diamond Notes brought to you by London Jewelers. Yankees down 3-0 to the Astros. Marcus Stroman, tough getting out of the gate. And the Yankees find themselves down 3-0 early. That is Diamond Notes, brought to you by London Jewelers. Visit London Jewelers today at any of their 7 locations, including the Americana Mall and the mall at Short Hills. Let's go to Danny B. in the car. Hey, Danny.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. Don, I got to know your favorite conspiracy theory. That's just a side note. I just want to talk real quick about the Knicks and how gritty that they're playing. I feel like this team right now and this iteration of this team is just... it's such an embodiment of New York and a representation of, you know, the whole New York strong, New York tough, and everything that is New York. And I just don't think it gets talked about enough, especially with the scapegoat of the refs and the whistle. You know, in every sports, the refs and the whistle is there. And I always grew up playing sports and being told to ignore it, right? Like, you can only control what you can control. You can't control the ref's whistle. So in the other 48 minutes, you go and do whatever else that you can to guarantee that you guys win a game.
Well,
you
know, I don't get caught up in the officiating, Danny, because, and Peter probably can attest to this because he does a lot of national work too. When I did NHL Live, we'd have to take calls from everybody in around the league about their teams the night before, and everybody complains that the officials were against their team. And I'm sure they're taking calls in Indiana. They're taking calls in Oklahoma City. They're taking calls in Dallas. They don't want us to win. The refs are in the bag for the other team. You got to stop. Officiating might be bad here or there, but at the end of the day, you're responsible for winning and losing. You got to try to find a way to overcome it. And unless it's a really bad call in the final seconds, you know what? I don't want to hear about a call in the first couple of quarters of a game. So much can happen that is going to make it work in or out for you. And constantly blaming the officials in sports, I think, is just so lame. It's so boring. It's so tired. Enough. As far as my favorite conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm. Can you say it?
I think it has to be the moon landing, right?
I mean, it's if for you, sure. A lot of people. Well, that's a very common one.
But that's also the safer one, too. I don't want to get into certain conversations about other
things. No, moon landing.
Moon landing's like a safe one, right?
Yeah. You don't want to offend anybody.
Do you think we really staged the moon landing?
Do I?
Yeah.
No, but when I've heard the people who actually believe it present it, I start to...
But the flat-out dumb one?
The not going back is what bothers me.
Well, I mean,
have you not had time to go back?
You know what? But you move on, no? It's not like that was the only time they went back. It's just you. But all right, we got the move.
You move
done
on
that.
I don't know. Do you
and
move
it takes
on?
A little while for more. The other one is the flat earthers. That's really dumb.
Flat Earth is a bad one. That's a tough one. It's a tough one to get up from. I'll be honest.
Because if you listen to these people, they think that like what we see in the sky is completely staged.
No. There are people who think that.
But why would the moon be round, but the Earth's flat? When we can look at a telescope, we can see Jupiter, we can see Neptune. We're the only one that's flat? Because they think, no, what you see, that's all just made up stuff. Though that's not real. Like, how can a planet be a perfect circle? It has to be made up. No, go take the deep dive, Peter. If you got nothing to do, once the playoffs are over, we're going to settle into the summer. You're probably going to be on a beach by the pool. You're going to be looking around. Instead of messing around on Twitter, take the deep dive into the flat earthers. You'll come out a different person.
I'll come out even more upset about society than I already am at this moment. If you only knew.
So there's your answer.
I'm interested in this one. It just popped up, but I'm interested in Jared's call. Jared on Long Island. Hey, Jared. Jared.
Michael, Don, Peter, how are you? Listen, fellas, this Knicks team is among the greatest sports team I've ever seen in my entire life. All right, now, fellas, just go with me here. If you remember, in 1986, Dr. J actually scored so many points against the Knicks that the Knicks players had to receive counseling. It was incredible. All right, fellas, let me tell you, back in 1953, I had a game of stickball where I was just smoking hot. All right, I went 4 for 5. I had some great pitches. In fact, I actually hit one kid in the teeth in accident, and they all fell out everywhere, and that's how I became a dentist. Fellas, hell of a Knicks game last night. Hope you have a good one.
That was good. I'm
into fake Richard.
That's why
I'm into fake.
That's
Richard.
Why you have to continue to take Richard calls.
I think, Don, you have to take Richard calls
because then Jared doesn't happen.
Well, because if you're a listener, you can't believe that Richard's a real person, and you're just so. How could it?
How can someone not want to meet Richard? Honestly,
he's never shown up to anything.
No, I'm contemplating that when we get into the summer, Peter, maybe it's going to have to be me and you. I don't know if Michael will agree to it. that we have him come in and do an hour.
An hour?
Just to see what he looks like. Aren't you just intrigued to meet the man?
It's a fair point by you.
Maybe an hour is a lot.
A lot. An hour is a lot.
Maybe a segment. But I think in person is important.
Chuck in Westchester. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey.
I thought the rejoin music was because I had mentioned to Anthony that I saw Billy Joel in the wild. I was actually in that house that he crashed into that time.
Oh, really?
What do you mean you were in the house?
No.
You know what? I'm a sucker. I'll believe anything.
I thought you meant like you'd been in the house at some point.
Yeah. That's what I thought. That's what I thought he meant. In the house.
All right, what do you got, Chuck?
Like Pulp Fiction.
No, that'd be quite a story, though. No, actually, this goes way back, and this is one of those like semi-in-the-wild situations, so... picture this, early 1990s, Westchester County, the Westchester County Center, Knicks Summer League. And me and my friends, we used to love all like the assistant coaches, and we used to be obsessed with like this one little wormy coach. And he was just this strange little dude. We're like, who is he? So I found out the name. And so we were at a Summer League game, and Pat Riley was not coaching. It was one of the assistant coaches. So walking halftime. Coming back from halftime, he's got the circle of the team around him, guys coaching, and I yell out, Jeff Van Gundy. And his head actually shoots up. He looks at me, because I don't think he even assumed anybody knew who he was at that time. He was like 20-something years old, had almost all of his hair. And he turns and looks, and I said, can I please get an autograph? And he just looks, and he gives this look of exasperation. He just goes, I can't. And then he looked away and went back to coaching. True story. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chuck.
It's not wild, but it is wild. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's a wild story.
It's a wild story. No, he's obviously was literally in the middle of a huddle, so I wouldn't call it in the wild, but nonetheless, a great story.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The point's gone.
You have made no good points, Peter.
You're so right, Michael.
I think you made some salient points.
Yeah, because you're an ass.
This sounds like it's absolute desperation. When I would think the Pacers should feel like they're in a good spot. They're going back home. Two of the best players on the Knicks might be compromised. One of them might be out. The players say they need to play better. Now, I'm not saying they're happy they're down 2-0, but they could still feel like they can win this series. But when your coach is complaining about the officiating and sending things to the league and complaining about they don't want us to win, that sounds like a guy that's absolutely desperate. So maybe the Pacers don't feel that way. Their coach doesn't sound like he feels that way. Dust yourself off. Go home. Even the series. But instead, you're complaining about the games that are already over, trying to get an advantage with the officiating? Boy, it sounds to me like Carlisle's really desperate.
I really thought my opening segment point to fight back against Michael's negativity was better.
Yeah, but that's a direct shot at Michael, and you know how the station feels about that.
You mean you think it was vetoed?
I can't. That's a conspiracy theory.
I got many tweets from people thought I wrapped up Point God at 3:03 today. Yeah, thought it was over.
I know, but you know what? You didn't. So what's our running total now as we enter Friday, Anthony?
2-2 and nothing for me. I've said nothing of value again. Another week, no words.
Wow. So tomorrow's gonna be up for grabs, as they say. But really, more importantly than really anything.
Oh,
else,
you mean actually up for grabs? Unlike the made up phrase Michael uses during baseball games.
OG Anunoby out for tomorrow's game three. Jalen Brunson listed as questionable for game three.
Holy crap.
So they're going to have to try to go up 3-0 without OG.
Oh, that's another point, God, I should have won for. That was better than your point. Neither should play tomorrow. Neither's playing tomorrow. What does it say for Sunday? Because tomorrow doesn't matter.
I don't know if.
Don't even show up tomorrow. But I might not even fly them out. Have them fly out on Saturday. Let them enjoy themselves.
How does that help?
Relax. I don't want. You know what? Maybe take. Remember the old Madden Cruiser? Don't even fly. Let them relax. Take your time.
I think relaxing on the charter is better than getting on a bus for 12 hours.
Well, you know, that's not any bus. That was a Madden crew.
I understand, but still, the man was afraid of flying. If he did that out of a choice because he liked flying, then he should have gotten a mental exam.
Wow. Well, no OG. Can you imagine, though? Imagine if they won tomorrow anyway. Then you just get to, you know.
Well, then you can attack Michael if the Open on Monday.
Actually, I'm still
worried. We don't know. No, yeah, because if we had done a show, because they're going to play Sunday game four, so it's a moot point. But then if it's like, yeah, I'm really worried about game four when you're up 3-0.
Yeah, that would be crazy time.
You know what? That's when they could come back in game four and you say, you know, we're not going to play it.
The question is, what does questionable mean for Brunson? And we'll talk about it during
the game. Well, I mean, in the NFL, it's less than 50%, right?
So
at 50, right?
So my question for you is...
I'm dumb. Doubtful is 75%. Questionable is 50%. So I'm sure it's the same in the NBA.
If Brunson doesn't feel 75 or better, I'm not playing him in game three.
Well, I guess it comes down to the medical staff looking at whatever the injury is, and we don't know what it is. Can you hurt it more? Or is it just a case of dealing with pain? And you can't hurt it more, then he may as well play. But if there's a chance that you can make the situation worse, but then by all means, you sit.
Man, OG is a. The problem with OG is this: the pain management thing with a hamstring. That is so ultimately a thing that can come down to the player. And OG is the kind of guy. Unfortunately, he could not come back at all with his history. When the injuries.
No, you don't want that.
No, you definitely don't. Connie has an in the wild story. Hey, Connie.
Hi, I have a in the wild. I saw Ice-T and his family. They were in first class. I just walked past them. But when we were collecting our luggage, he was standing next to me, and he grabbed the wrong suitcase. Mm-hmm. And somebody started yelling at him, "That's my suitcase. Don't steal my suitcase." So I hadn't said anything to him, but when he did that, I said, we have to get law and order on this case. Anyway.
How did he react to that?
He laughed. He thought it was cute, but I still didn't say, Ice-T, I love you, because, you know, it's a trying time when you've been on a flight and you're trying to collect your luggage. I didn't want to bother him.
It's a great point by you, Connie, and thank you for the call. It's a great and unfortunate thing that for celebrities, the airport is such a common place to see someone. Because depending on the travel they just had, like, you may view it as, oh, they're at the airport, who cares? But if they just had a really annoying flight...
I know, it's tough.
It could be, like, the absolute worst time.
Do you think Connie knew that he rapped?
Sure.
Did she just know him from TV?
No, she knows.
What do you think he'd appreciate? That reference or... Midnight chilling at AM PM, cool and drinking apple juice.
I think in your case, he'd be more excited to see you.
He follows me on Twitter, so.
But still, you know what? He'd be excited. Quick one, Tommy. Quick in the wild. What is it?
Hey, oh, I'm sorry. Hey, what's going on?
What is it? What's your in the wild?
We lose Tommy.
There he is. What is it?
Oh, that was a huge mistake. ENN coming up next.
Oh boy. I'm not ending that way. Matt, give me your in the wild. Sorry, Tommy. Matt, what's your in the wild?
Hey, P, what's up, man?
What up, man?
I just want to say I love you guys, first and foremost.
Thanks, man.
So I do have an in the wild story, but I do also want to comment on the officiating before you guys kick me off.
Okay. But we got to make it quick. We're going to ENN. Hit it quick. Go.
All right, quick. All right, so this is back in the day, like 2005, I'd say, when I used to play NBA Live on my Xbox.
Yeah.
And I only used to play with the All-Star teams, right?
All right, interesting.
So I knew, like, the big names, like LeBron, Jermaine O'Neal, stuff like that, right? So I see the guys coming into the locker room after, like, halftime or whatever, and I screamed, "Jermaine!" And I got the dirtiest look, Peter, from who I now know is Steven Jackson. I guess they both had braids and headbands, so...
No, Matt. You called Jermaine O'Neal Steven Jackson? I mean, you called Steven Jackson Jermaine O'Neal?
No,
but I got the dirtiest look. This is like Mouse in the Palace Steven Jackson, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was not to be trifled with at that time.
Yeah, and now what I want to say about the officiating, between Game 1 and those two blown calls... And the Joe Burrow intentional grounding call in the AFC Championship, I am now convinced sports are rigged, and I am so depressed.
Matt, You're a psychopath. We love you. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah, and I think Matt was also high.
Yeah, Matt, you gotta slow down. This medical grade marijuana.
You gotta pace yourself.
I'm telling you, pace yourself, brother. Before ENN, Inside the Numbers, brought to you by Eisner Amper. Do you know that Josh Hart has traveled 27.6 miles this postseason? He's the first player to run a marathon over an 8-game span within a postseason since player tracking began in 2013-14. Wow. Per Second Spectrum. That's Inside the Numbers, brought to you by Eisner Amper, a leading business advisory firm helping clients transform their companies, build capital, innovate processes, and mitigate risk. Make Eisner Amper part of your solution. Learn more at EisnerAmper.com/solution.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.